Good morning. My name is Sharon Townsend. I'm connected with Women's Bible Study, with a small group, connections team, and of course, reading. And I get to start our first part in John, our new series. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him, not anything made was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me.' For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God, who is at the Father's side. He has made him known."
Thanks, Sharon. Well, my name is Zach Thompson. I'm a pastor here at Calvary Bible Church. I invite you to open up your Bibles to that passage, to John chapter 1, whether you have it in print or pixel. Or if you are looking for a Bible, we have some in the back, and John chapter 1 is on page 1051. We are a church that goes through the Bible. We want to understand what has God said so we can understand what God is saying to us now. And as you're turning there, I want to ask a rhetorical question of, have you ever read one of those books that have a list of characters before you even get into the story? So very first page, it lists out all the different characters that you will then experience in the story that you're about to read. Generally, I don't care about that list. I just skip past it. I figure I'm going to meet these characters along the way in the story. I don't need this. But there's been some books that I am desperate for a list like that. I think in particular of some of the works of Russian literature that I've read, to where there's a lot of characters in books like that, and I don't speak Russian, I'm not from Russia, and so I don't really understand or know the names that come from that place, other than like the cliche names or the names of hockey players. And so the names just start to look very similar to me. They all have the same ending to it, and so I get them confused, and so I need to keep going back to that list of characters to try to remember, all right, which one is this? And it's really helpful. They don't just say the character names. They give a little blurb, a little bit of a bio to help jog your memory of who this character is. So you'll get things like, this person was in the army. This person is an heiress. This woman over here, she is in a relationship with this guy who's over here. And so just a little bit of information to help jog your memory as you're reading through the story. But oftentimes it's enough information to make some educated guesses as to what you're about to experience in the story. There's some details that are given that you can pretty much guess as to what parts are going to appear in the story that you're about to read. This man was in a relationship before he got married. Well, we could probably guess that that previous person he was in a relationship with is going to make an appearance at some point. This woman has fallen in on hard times, but she's trying to keep up the appearance of being wealthy. Pretty certain she's going to get found out for not having very much money as part of the story. This guy has a severe allergy to cheese, and so we can put together that probably he's going to eat some sort of cheese that Russia apparently is famous for. It's a literary device known as Chekhov's dairy allergy. Now, in the Gospel of John, we don't have a list of characters. But we do have something that essentially serves that same function, these first 18 verses. And John, as he starts off his gospel, he gives these first 18 verses to show us the characters that we're about to see in the story, to show us what they're like, but more than that, to tell us little bits as to what we will see throughout the story that is to come, hints as to what will be unpacked in the chapters to follow. But it's not as though we are left trying to make guesses, trying to piece together, oh, from these clues, we can try to figure out what the story is going to be like. No, John doesn't just give us little blurbs. He doesn't just give us a bio of these characters. He tells us the whole story right from the very beginning. From these first 18 verses, John tells us exactly what we are to expect throughout his gospel. Now, as we're kicking off this series, as we're beginning our time through the Gospel of John, and since we're going to be in this for, say, for around Christmas until Easter, we're going to be in this series for a while, it's good to give some of the background information on it. So I've already hit two things that I should probably give some definition to, right? We say that this is a gospel written by John. Who's John and what's a gospel? It's probably helpful for us to get to. Now, there's a long and a short answer to this, and we're just going to skip the long answer. It essentially comes down to people debate both of those things. What is a gospel and who is John? But for our purposes, John is the follower of Jesus, his disciple, who is an eyewitness to all that Jesus does throughout this story. And that's essentially what a gospel is as well. It is a story of who Jesus is and what he has done, telling us the work that Jesus has accomplished for us, this good news, that's what gospel means, this good news that he has accomplished on our behalf. And John is a great gospel for this because he doesn't leave us guessing. He doesn't leave us wondering, why did he write this? Why spend all this time telling us who Jesus is and what he's done? He tells us exactly why he writes this gospel. Towards the end of it, in John chapter 20, you could say in John chapter 1, we'll put it up on the screen, but in John chapter 20, John tells us the purpose of this whole book. He says, now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples than the ones that he writes about here. Many other signs which are not written in this book, but these are written, so all of this is written, so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah, the Savior of the world, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. See, John says, I've written down all that I saw Jesus do. I've written down all that Jesus has done so that you might believe in him. And by believing in him, have life in his name. That's why we titled this series, That You May Have Life. Because the whole purpose of this book, everything that John does in this gospel, is so that you may believe in Jesus and have life in his name. But as we said, we don't need to jump to the end of this gospel to understand why John wrote it. From the very beginning, from these first 18 verses, John tells us everything that is about to happen in the story. He tells us the characters, he tells us what the themes are, he tells us what this story is all about from the very beginning. If he did have a list of characters, we would find it here. And right at the very beginning, we would see the most important character, the one who shows up over and over again, that we see that this gospel is ultimately the story of God. He is the character that would be right at the top of the page on the character list for this gospel. But he doesn't just tell us who God is, that it's about God. All throughout these first 18 verses, he is telling us about this character. He's telling us about God. And we see that from the very first words, that he is showing us that this God that's being talked about here in the Gospel of John, he's not some new character. He's not someone who pops up out of nowhere. But this God is the God of the Old Testament. From all those stories that come before this in the Bible, from all that we see before the Gospel of John, it's the same character. That God is the one who's showing up here. And we get that from those first few words of John chapter 1, verse 1. It says, in the beginning. And we could even just stop right there. In the beginning. It just sounds like a simple way to start a story, right? We always want to hear where stories pick up. We always want to go to where the story actually begins. But there's so much that's built within this. There's so much that John is hinting at with these words. These aren't just arbitrary words. He isn't just randomly picking a way to start a story. These are very meaningful, in the beginning. In three simple words, John is saying so much because he's hoping that this will sound familiar. He's hoping that this might jog a memory, like how you and I might communicate. We don't say the whole thing, but we just hint at what we mean. Like if we wanted to recall what a story might be, I don't need to go into all detail, but I could say, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, we know what that's being we know what that's talking about there. When John says in the beginning, he isn't just arbitrarily saying, this is where the story starts. He wants that to jog a memory for us. Wait, I know those words. That's how the whole Bible starts. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. See, when John starts his story off by saying, in the beginning, he's pointing back to all that came before. He's trying to show the continuation of the story that came before this. He's recalling the storyline of the Bible and say, that God who'd been working previously, he's the one who's working here now. This past summer as a church, we spent every single week looking over the storyline of the Old Testament, looking over what happens before the Gospel of John, seeing how God works. And what John is saying here, by saying in the beginning, he's saying that that God that we looked at every single week over the summer, the God who we read all throughout the 37 books of the Old Testament, that God is still working here in this story. The God of Adam and Abraham and Moses and Ruth is who this story is about as well. The God who made the world is still making here. The God who pursued his people is still pursuing his people here. See, John is saying, I'm not writing a new story. I'm not starting fresh. I'm not telling you a tale that's come out of nowhere. No, the God of the Old Testament, the God who's always been working, the God who always exists, is doing so here as well. Instead, the Gospel of John is the story of how God keeps every single promise that he made in the Old Testament. The Gospel of John is a story of how God is showing the extent to which he will pursue his people. The Gospel of John is the story of how every single instance that we read about in the Old Testament comes to life here. And we continue that by seeing that this God of the Old Testament, now in this story, is making belief possible. He's starting this story. He's entering into human history to make belief in him possible. We pick it up in the next section, starting in verse 6. It said, there was a man sent from God whose name was John. Just a quick pause. I know we called this the Gospel of John, and so now we come to a man named John, different John. I know that's a little bit confusing. It's called the Gospel of John, the first guy that we meet named John, no, but not him, the different guy. It would be really helpful if we had those character sheets, right? So like, which John are we talking about right here? Or at least give us last names. This is not talking about John the author. This is John the Baptist, and we'll talk about him a little bit more next week. But there was a man sent from God whose name was John. So John was sent by God, and he came as a witness to bear witness about the light that all might believe through him. He, John, was not the light, but he came to bear witness about the light. All right. That's really confusing. It's saying light a whole lot right there. I mean, all of these 18 verses are so jam-packed full of meaning. There's so much that's being talked about. It makes a really hard introduction to the story. I mean, we say in the beginning, but there's no birth of Jesus. We just talk about the light. We'd say it's in the beginning, but there's no story about how Jesus gets to this point. We're just calling the word and all kinds of confusing things. It makes for a really difficult read. But everything that we read in this time will get unpacked later on. So this idea of light, that's going to be an important theme throughout the Gospel of John, and we'll see it pop up time and time again. I mean, one of the most famous verses of John, John 3:16, it comes around this conversation of the light. Light will show up over and over again, but he's merely hinting at the themes that will to come. The point that he's making here, though, is that God sends this man, this guy named John, who was going out and baptizing. And the reason why God sent this man named John was to prepare the way. It even says so, that he was sent so that all might believe through him. The purpose of John being sent by God is so that all might believe. Now, that's the second time that we've seen that word believe. We saw it in John chapter 20, the purpose why John wrote this, so that you may believe, and by believing in him, have life in his name. And now we see that John was sent so that all might believe. If you're someone who doesn't like redundancy, like you're like, man, John, pick a different word. I do have bad news for you. Believe is a word that shows up 90-something times in the Gospel of John. Over and over again, we will see this idea of believing. And there's a reason for that. John writes everything here. All that's recorded for us, all that we see God do in the story is so that we, you and me, might believe, might trust that what in what God has done, might see that God is working, that he is pursuing human throughout history. Every single word that John so artfully uses in this gospel is for the purpose of us believing. And by believing in him, that we would have life in his name. See, from the very beginning, John tells us that God is working in this story so that we may believe. All of it, all that God does is for us to believe. See, I used to unfairly mock, maybe the right word. I don't know. I wasn't doing it from a good intention. It would be unfairly critical of a practice that we would see in Christians of either giving or receiving the Gospel of John when you're a new Christian. Did anyone experience that when you were trying to figure out what Christianity was about? Yeah. Someone is with me at least. I appreciate that. We give out the Gospel of John as a way to show what Jesus is like. And I was always critical of that. I was like, this is the most weird introduction to any story. Why would we give this to someone who doesn't know who Jesus is? It's talking about lights and words and all kinds of stuff. It doesn't make for a really easy read. I just wondered, like, would people continue to press on after these first 18 verses? They're weird. We should acknowledge they're weird. But it's come to the conclusion of, man, John is the perfect gospel to give to people who've never experienced Jesus. Because every bit of it is written so that people would believe. I mean, even for those of us who've been following Jesus for a long time, John is a perfect gospel for us to be reading. Because it is pointing us back to the work that God has done. So whether we are new to Christianity or we've been around for a while, we are given a new and a fresh perspective of who Jesus is every time that we go to this gospel. We are reminded of all that we have in him. We are reminded of all that God has done for the very purpose that we would believe and by believing have life in his name. The idea is continued into the next section, which goes from verses 9 to 13, where it continues on in the story that that the God of the Old Testament, who makes belief possible, does so to create a people for himself. That the work that God is doing here, all of it so that we could believe, makes a people for himself. And we can see that if we get to the end of the section, verses 12 and 13. It says, but to all who did receive him, talking about Jesus, those who received Jesus, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. See, we're told that God does this work. The story that we're going to see in this Gospel of John is so that God can create a people for himself. I mean, the only reason why we are people to begin with is God created us. But the work that God does in the story is to create us as a people for him, to make us his children. That's what it says. Those who did receive him, those who believe in his name, third use of believe so far, so only 87 or so to go. Those who believe in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, to be his, to be heirs of all that he has, to be with him, to know and be known by this God, to be in relationship with him, to have closeness with this God that we are always meant to be with. Now we might ask, how is that possible? Like I said, we spent all summer going through the Old Testament and we see story after story of this not working out. We see from throughout the Old Testament storyline that ever since sin entered into this world, ever since humans rebelled against God, this world has been broken. It's been marred. It's been less than what it's always been meant to be. And the result of that is that humans themselves are broken, that all of us are scrambling to find some sort of purpose and identity and value, that we just see this world broken from the very beginning. It's not what it's meant to be. And as we try to go back to God, the God that we are always meant to be with, we are always meant to be children of God, which that is where we find our purpose, identity, and value. But we were not able to because we chose to turn away from him. We rebelled against God, and God is so perfect and holy that we could not draw near to him. So how does John possibly say, after we saw in throughout the Old Testament storyline of God pursuing his people and them turning away, how could we possibly say that there's an ability to be children of God when we see God's people constantly look towards other things? How could we say that we could be near God when we see throughout the Old Testament storyline that as people try to draw near to him, sin makes that impossible? How could we say that there's a time to know and be known by God when this removal has marked human history ever since the very beginning? Well, it's only possible if something is changing in that story. It's only possible. Otherwise, we just keep doing that same loop over and over again that we saw throughout the Old Testament. Something needs to change to make it permanent. Something needs to change to make the story different than what it was in the Old Testament. Something needs to change to make this possible. And the hint is, it's not you and me. We see what happens throughout the Old Testament if it's left to you and me, and it's the same story over and over and over again. So how can John possibly say that people can be the children of God if we know we can't do anything to make that happen? We can't draw near to God. We can't approach him. We can't get close to him. We can't be perfect like he is. Something needs to change in the story. And what changes is how God works. What changes is that God is doing something new. And that's what makes it possible to be his children. That's what makes it possible to be near to him. That's what makes it possible to not have the New Testament look just like the Old Testament. And what he does, the God of the Old Testament, makes belief in impossible, creating a people for himself by becoming flesh, by becoming human, by entering into this world, by joining in with humans who could not possibly draw near to him. God does something new by showing up in this world that he made, in this world that was made perfect, but we rebelled, with his people that we were always meant to be with him, but we have turned away. God himself pursued his people by becoming a person as well, by becoming human as well. We see this captured really well in John 1:14. It says, "And the word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth." Again, it's weird. It's a weird sentence to read. But we've seen this idea before. This idea of the Word, with a capital W, was used of Jesus before. It was talking very clearly. This was a name that was substituted for Jesus. But again, John is very intentional with his words. Just like when he said, "In the beginning," that's supposed to make us think of something. When he is calling Jesus the Word here, that's not just a throwaway line. That's not just a cool nickname that he gave him. There's meaning behind that. Because the audience that John was writing to, they would have had an understanding of what they thought the Word, capital W, would have meant. It's a reminder that whenever we read the Bible, it comes with the understanding that it's not written to us. John isn't sitting there writing like, "Man, Thornton in 2025, they're going to love this." Like, it's not written to us. He has an original audience that he's writing to. But it is written for us. There's so much that we get from this book. There's so much that changes us. We do receive this book, but it's not originally written to us. So John was writing to an audience that would have had an understanding of what the Word would have meant. And he had two different people in his audience, those who were Jewish, influenced by Jewish thinking, and those who were from the greater Roman world, influenced by Greek thinking. And that was probably the bigger chunk of his audience. We have some clues throughout the book that make us think, oh, it's primarily written to non-Jewish people who didn't have an Old Testament background. Some in there, but not all people would have had an Old Testament background. Now, both of those camps would have had an understanding of what the Word meant. In Greek thought, it was an idea that, man, there's got to be something that explains all of this world. There's got to be something that helps us to see the purpose, to help us understand what life is like, almost like an owner's manual. Now, they didn't actually have that in their hand, but people would try to understand what is the overarching purpose or overarching design of all of creation. They called that the Word, like an owner's manual of all of life. In Jewish thought, the Word was the divine revelation of God, the best and clearest picture that we have of what God is like. That was called the Word. So you have two different meanings of what this Word would have meant to the two different audiences. When I was in Bible school, I took a class on Johannine literature, which is just a fancy way of saying things written by John. And so this would have been the book of John, 1, 2, 3 John, the smaller letters that come later on, and the book of Revelation. The professor that I had, he did all of his study on the book of John, so we kind of just skipped the rest of it. I don't know why we called it Johannine literature. We just looked at most of the book of John here. But he was this quirky guy who's really funny, but really bright, really sharp. And he would point out that there's so many times throughout the Gospel of John to where you get to a crossroads. Man, there seems to be two different meanings that could be going on here. Two different ways to understand what John has talked about. Do I go to this one or do I go to this one? Which one is the right understanding? And my professor would often pretend like John, the author, was sitting in the corner of our room. And whenever we got to one of these crossroads, like, which one is the right reading? He would pretend like John was sitting there, just nodding. Yes. John plays with language so much, plays with meaning so much, that he wants us to see both of them to get to the clearest picture of what is true. Is it this one or is it that one? Yeah, it sure is. So here we have this understanding of the Word. Is it the picture of this overarching design and owner's manual that gives us the purpose of life? Or is it a picture of how God has most clearly revealed himself? Which one is it? Yeah, that's what Jesus is. Jesus is what shows us the significance and value and purpose of all of life. And Jesus is the clearest picture that we have of what God is like. You want to know what God's like? Look at Jesus. You want to know what's the purpose of life? Look at Jesus. He is the Word. And every sense of meaning to it, he is that one. Because here we have the story of how it's possible for God to draw near, God to show us what life is like. When we could not draw near to God, he drew near to us. When we could not understand him, God made himself known in his Word. God revealed himself. When we were lost and trying to find direction and feeling the purposelessness of life, he has shown us the purpose of it all. His Word gives meaning to all existence because it shows us him. So what that means is that this story is not giving us a new character. As we're looking at that character list at the beginning of the Gospel of John, we see God right at the top. But as we get to Jesus, it's not as though he gets his own line. He gets his own summary. Instead, when we see that what's being told of us in these first 18 verses, it's the story of the God of the Old Testament who makes belief possible in him, creates a people for himself by becoming flesh. And the way that sentence ends is by saying, and he is Jesus. That God who's always existed, always pursued his people, always worked, that is Jesus. He's not some second character coming up. He's not some new person. This is that same God that we've been reading about in the Old Testament. Now he's come doing something new. And we're told that from the very beginning. See, this is significant. We are clued in from the very beginning, and that helps us to understand the whole rest of the story. That as we read through the story, and I invite you, I encourage you, be with us as we're going through the Gospel of John. Invite people who are new to Christianity or who have turned away from this Jesus to be part of this series. This is where we get to see who Jesus is. And by believing in him, have life in his name. But not just participate in Sundays with us, but read along with the story. But because John begins the gospel this way, tells us exactly what's going on, when we read the rest of the story, we do so already having this knowledge. So as Jesus is talking with people and people are wondering, who is this Jesus? We don't have to ask that. We already know. This is God doing a new work to enable us to believe in him and have life in his name. As people ask questions, like, where does Jesus get this authority? We don't need to ask that as well. We know the answer to that because of how John started the story. He doesn't just give us this introduction so we know the characters. He doesn't just write in this way so that we know the overall theme of it and get to piece it together as we go. No, John begins the gospel this way for that very purpose that he writes. He wants us to believe. He wants us to know what Jesus is doing. He wants us to put our faith and trust in him. And by showing us that that is the story from the very beginning, that helps us along the way. That helps us to believe along the way. That helps us to get to his very purpose, which is to believe in him. Knowing how the story ends changes how we understand the story. When I was a kid, my family would regularly rent movies, and then we'd watch them together at night. And one time we rented the movie Pearl Harbor, which we knew going into it, this was probably going to be split up over multiple nights. It was a very long movie. It was 3 hours long. It was one of those to where, even though we got it on DVD, it was so long, it needed to be split up over multiple discs. And so we were going to sit down for it after dinner, and my sister put the disc in, and we're watching it, and it's a weird movie. It's really strange. Like, we're just watching people fighting these battles in Japan, and it didn't really introduce the characters all that well. It just kind of expects you to know who they are. And then, strange, like, one of the characters, like, he was on the cover of the DVD, like, dies pretty early into it, and it seems really dramatic, and I don't really get why that's important. And then the credits start playing. And we were really confused as a family. We thought this movie called Pearl Harbor would have had something to do with, I don't know, Pearl Harbor, but it didn't at all. So we get the disc out of it, and right there on the front of it, all those all-important words, disc two. My sister had put the wrong one in, which we've never brought up at her expense over the years to come. But when we eventually got to it and we watched disc one in the order that we were supposed to, it still didn't make for a great movie watching experience. Because, yeah, there was a lengthy part on Pearl Harbor, who would have thought? But as there's these dramatic scenes and the music is swelling and this character like is going through a really hard time, every time it was like, yeah, big deal. I've seen you in Japan. You're going to be fine. Knowing how the story ends changed how I understood the story. But we have it in a positive way here in the Gospel of John. He doesn't leave us guessing. He doesn't leave us trying to figure out what the story is going to do or to put the pieces together. From the very beginning, John tells us what the story is. Here is God in the flesh to make it possible for us to believe in him. From the very beginning, from the prologue, it tells us what to expect, and so we read the stories that come from that lens. Here is God. Here is Jesus. But it doesn't just change the way that we read this gospel. From these first 18 verses, it changes the way we read everything. Because we know this to be true, it changes how we read our very lives. Everything that we do, every event that we go through, everything that we experience in our lives is read through the lens of these 18 verses. No matter the good or the hard, no matter if we're going through times of excellence or difficulty, we know the story that's already been given. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Here is this Jesus who is God, who has come to this earth, who has lived this life, he's died this death so that you and I can have life in his name. So that we can believe in him and have life in his name. The God that we were always meant to be with has done all of this to be with us. The God who has always pursued his people has done so to the point of coming to this world. This God that we were meant to be with, that we cannot draw near, drew near to us instead. This God who makes us a people to begin with, and makes us people to begin with, does this work so that we would be a people in him. Knowing that story changes how we interpret everything. Think about it for us as a church. That Justin pointed out that we are a church that seeks to build Christ-centered communities of people fully devoted to loving God and loving others. And to point to that piece, it says right there, we are Christ-centered. Because of this story, because of what's captured here in these 18 verses, all that we seek to do is centered on this Jesus. Because he has come, he shapes everything that we do here. Because of what he's accomplished, all that we seek to accomplish is done in light of that. Because he is the God who's drawn near to us, everything hinges on him. Everything hinges on what John writes in 18 short verses. Everything that we do is changed because of this story. Everything that we do is changed. Our story is different because we know this to be true. That's why we as a church, we do everything that we possibly can to help one another to follow this Jesus, to be his disciples, to draw closer to him, to be more like him, to follow him. Because these are not just words that we put on a wall. But when we know that this is true, this story that's given to us, told from the very beginning, it changes the story of our lives as well. And that's because Jesus has come. He's arrived. The God of the Old Testament that we could not approach because of our brokenness. The God who is so holy that no one could draw near to the place where he was. The God who is so powerful that people could not experience his presence. He has come. And so that we can believe in him and have life in his name. That's the story that we're going to be going through in the Gospel of John. And that's the story that we live out of every single day because of what's written here. And the word, Jesus, God became flesh and dwelt among us. He came to where we are. We've seen his glory, the glory of the only Son of the Father, full of grace and truth. That is a story that changes everything.